It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with the answer to an audience question about one of Wisconsin community's iconic creatures.
Trolls are everywhere you look in the Dane County village of Mount Horeb. Troll cartoons on the street signs, troll footprints on the sidewalk, sculptures of trolls lining Main Street. The sheer number of trolls in the community prompted a Wisconsin listener to ask, what's the deal with all the trolls? WPR's Tim Peterson went to find the answer.
Over the years, Leah Jaber has frequented a Mount Horeb tea shop with her family. During each visit, the trolls always got the attention of the Madison East High School senior. You know, trolls, those ugly and dim-witted, yet powerful ancient figures from Norway's pagan past. To satisfy her curiosity, Jaber reached out to WPR's Wisconsin.
The biggest thing that got me curious is basically just seeing all the trolls, but having no idea where they came from or what they represent or what they mean.
I invited Jaber to join me to find the answer in Mount Horeb, officially trademarked the troll capital of the world. We meet at the Mount Horeb Area Historical Society, where Destiny Udelhoven is the director. She says they get asked about the trolls constantly.
What's the deal with the trolls? That's like exactly how they ask it.
Udelhoven says the abundance of trolls harkens back to the area's Norwegian heritage and a marketing push to attract visitors.
I think that's what I want people to see as a historian, is that the trolls didn't spring out of nowhere. We didn't pick them because they were just the most marketable thing. You know, they really have a strong, deep connection to our history here.
That connection being two major waves of Norwegian immigrants to the Mount Horeb area in the mid and late 19th century. Mount Horeb is known for its lasting Norwegian culture, a living museum outside of town with Norwegian-style buildings, annual Norwegian musical performances, and a water tower covered in rosemaling, a stylized Norwegian floral painting. In the 80s, a Mount Horeb resident was also crafting two-dimensional birch bark trolls. Jaber saw these up close at the Historical Society.
So you can walk down this little crevice and you can be surrounded by the trollness of them. Go ahead, you're the one who asked. Yes. Go down there, experience it.
They're definitely different than the carved trolls because they're painted kind of realistically. So yeah, I guess I'm a tiny bit scared, but I think it's kind of like joyous energy, I guess.
The carved trolls, the ones you may have seen lining Main Street, the chicken thief, the mayor. Local artist Mike Feeney did most of them.
I kind of get a kick out of them because they're humorous. They're a little bit off-center. Trolls really are not like the kind of cuddly things that you want to bring home. The Norwegian trolls are mean and nasty. They'll poison your well. They'll burn your crops. But the Mount Horeb ones are more like the New World trolls, a little happier, a little more jovial, and a little bit off-kilter.
Feeney was commissioned by the village in the 1980s to solve a marketing problem. That's according to Jim Leary, professor emeritus of folklore and Scandinavian studies at UW-Madison. He's also a longtime resident of Mount Horeb.
In the 70s, folks in Mount Horeb were realizing that the construction of the 18-151 bypass would route traffic away from their town, and how could they get people to come in? And so there was a meeting of minds about what kind of theme to emphasize, and they did surveys, and Norwegianness seemed to be something that they could ballyhoo a little bit.
Not everyone in the village loved the trolls right away, and Feeney says some came around when they started getting results.
They kind of fought for their existence, the trolls did, and then the people behind them really enjoyed them, and then apparently they brought a lot of people coming to town, taking their picture in front of the troll.
And while the trolls aren't for everyone, many locals will tell you they're lucky. And in this village, trolls are the protectors of the residents, the businesses, and nature.
WPR's Tim Peterson brought us that story on Mount Horeb's trolls. And that story idea came to us from an audience question as part of WPR's Wisconsin. Submit your question and we might answer it. Go to WPR.org/Wisconsin. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The U.S. Census Bureau has redefined the meaning of an urban area. Millions of Americans who live in small cities, towns, and villages lost their urban designation and moved to the rural category. Call in with your questions about this change. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jerry Deshane is Executive Director of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. Jerry, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, good morning, Kate. Although I do have to say, really, we're going to talk about statistics after that story on trolls? I don't know. The juxtaposition really makes me uncomfortable.
Jerry, we're open to all ideas. So,
yeah, we're going to say a troll did this one.
Oh my goodness, we digress. Okay, so the Census Bureau's new definition means more than 1,100 urban areas are now considered rural. How big of a deal is this change for places that have been redefined?
The scary truthful answer, Kate, is we don't know yet. Our concern all along with this change, which by the way affects about somewhere around 40 Wisconsin cities and villages, the simple fact is this could either be a drag on their ability to attract economic development and, you know, new growth. It could be a drag on their ability to compete for state and federal grants, or it maybe could have no effect at all. Unfortunately, we don't know, and we won't know which of those is the case until we're into this for a few years.
Any thoughts on why the Census Bureau made the change in definition to what's an urban area?
The Census Bureau has been under pressure from data analysts and statisticians for several decades. They use 2,500 as the dividing line. If your community has a population of 2,500 or under, you are considered rural. If it was 2,501 or higher, you were considered urban. And data analysts, for reasons that I guess I really don't know, thought that the number should be up around 5,000. So there's that group of communities between 2,500 and 5,000. We're talking about places like Oconto or Omro or Waupaca, Pulaski, places like that, not Waupaca, but Pulaski, sort of those middle-sized cities and villages in Wisconsin. Are the ones that, you know, they woke up in the morning, thought they were living in the big city, but by the evening they realized they were back home on the farm. So it's a statistical move only. There really hasn't been a shift to rural in Wisconsin. The Census Bureau will say it's a better way to count and to consider what's rural, what's urban. I have to be honest with you, if you went and stood on a street corner in Omro and asked most people, they would either look at you with a blank stare or say, well, we've been rural forever anyway. I don't think people on the ground are going to care. It only comes home to roost when it comes down to, like I said, economic development. And perhaps competition for grant funding.
The Associated Press was reporting that the change could affect federal funding. You just mentioned grants, like, you know, federal funding for healthcare, transportation, education, other services. What effects could it have, though, in terms monetarily on communities?
Well, and this is what's been frustrating about this, Kate. The League submitted a letter to the Census Bureau last March when this was being considered, because the Census Bureau came right out and said, we are not going to look at the impact of this on other federal agencies and programs. They essentially washed their hands of that and said, that's not our problem. That's not our responsibility. And there's just simply no clearinghouse where you can go there and say, okay, if this community goes from rural to urban, what does that mean? What can't they compete for? Or are they creating more competition for other smaller communities? That information simply doesn't exist. We hope the Wisconsin Department of Transportation would have a clear answer on some of their road grant programs, but they just don't. What's going to happen now is over the next couple of years, state and federal agencies will either perceive a problem or they won't perceive a problem in who's able to compete for grants and who's not.
Hmm.
So, you know, it's a little obscure.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
One thing that jumped out at me in the changes is that for the first time, the Census Bureau adding housing units to the definition of an urban area. And, you know, we've been talking on our show with mayors a bunch in recent months. So many Wisconsin communities have housing stock issues, not enough workforce housing in particular. Is that concerning as you see the census shift?
I'll get into why it's concerning, but it's a secondary effect.
Uh-huh.
Whether they use housing units or actual bodies as the count, in a place like Wisconsin, where frankly we have a lot of second homes, it's actually somewhat beneficial.
Oh.
Because what they're saying is it's either 5,000 population or 2,000 housing units within a given area. You know, they didn't used to count housing units. So now that will help somewhat get a more accurate account of what's going on in that community. But Kate, one of the concerns, economic development experts often tell us that when a company is looking to relocate to an area, they only look at what are called metropolitan service areas. And those are not rural areas. Those are urban areas. And in Wisconsin, we've just taken 40 cities and villages off that list. Now, will that really have an effect on Mazomanie? Don't know. Just simply don't know.
Jerry DeShane leads the League of Wisconsin Municipalities as we look at challenges facing urban and rural communities, including population change and access to government funding. Call in with your questions, your thoughts, any point in our conversation, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We dig into how Wisconsin local governments are operating after the U.S. Census Bureau redefines urban and rural communities. Join our conversation about the budget situation, the impacts to delivering basic services. Your questions welcome, 800-642-1234. Jerry DeShane is Executive Director of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities and stays with us. Let's take a call now. Kevin in Janesville. Kevin, hi. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. Since this is just really a statistical thing, could not the Census Bureau have just created like a semi-rural category to account for these mid-range towns? And can something be done at the state level for these municipalities, branding, marketing, attracting those mid-range or smaller employers that are stressing that great work versus life balance that so many people of us are really trying to achieve?
Kevin, thank you so much. Jerry?
I hope Kevin applies for a job at the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Kevin, your idea about the Census Bureau creating a mid-range, they could have. I think their answer back to you was the whole point of this exercise was to somewhat simplify, because they also removed a second definition of what was urban. So they'd be a little resistant to that. Your other observation, though, about the state stepping in and helping to promote and support these mid-range municipalities is excellent. The reality is that so much of Wisconsin is rural. I mean, I absolutely hate the term flyover state. You know, is this change going to put even more of our places in a forgotten position? You know, do we have to speak a little more loudly to the rest of the country and say, hey, don't forget that these little teeny cities and villages are where a lot of really cool stuff gets made. There's a fabulous work ethic here. In other words, we need to do a better job promoting Wisconsin assets. I think Kevin is absolutely right. While this isn't a major setback, I don't think it'd be fair to say that. I think it's a good reminder that we do need to work harder to tell the rest of the world the Wisconsin story.
switching gears here now to shared revenue and your take here. I mean, we saw Governor Evers during his reelection campaign calling for increasing state funding of local governments by 10%, that shared revenue program. How much a difference would that hike make for cities and villages?
It, in numbers terms, it would be about $75 million, but in realistic terms, it would in many ways be a lifeline. The way we fund local government in Wisconsin, that system is broken. And the bad news is a number of our municipalities are either headed for or dancing on a fiscal cliff. The good news is the governor's talking about it, the state legislative leaders are talking about it, and there's a lot of interest in fixing it.
How would you update? How would you go about fixing the formula?
It's very simple. What we have suggested to the governor and to legislators is dedicate a penny of the state sales tax. Don't increase it. I want to be real clear on that. But dedicate 1 cent of the 5 cent state sales tax to local government. That would be a significant increase. It would keep police departments funded. It would allow us to shore up our EMS system, which, by the way, is collapsing all over Wisconsin. And furthermore, the most important thing it would do, Kate, is it would link local governments to the economy. Hmm. Right now, the primary funding mechanism that local governments have is the property tax. I think we can all agree that it is overtaxed, no pun intended, but that's all cities and villages and towns and counties have. By linking, basically making a bargain or reestablishing a bargain with the state saying, every year, whatever the sales tax raised, send 20% of that back to local government. And that would become a reliable revenue stream for them. It would also be a stream that's linked to the economy, linked to the local economy, linked to the state economy.
Do you see an appetite with that when you talk with lawmakers and you see what the governor has in mind?
That is the good news, yes. I see an appetite to make a change. Now, I think the governor, you know, everybody's got a little bit different take how they do this. The governor would do it simply by increasing the shared revenue formula. That is one approach. Legislative leaders are more interested in dedicating a portion of the sales tax. That is another approach. Either approach would work. We think the sales tax approach is more sustainable in the long run, but we are absolutely willing to have a conversation and figure out what works best for everyone.
In recent days, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss has said, you know, he's open to increasing shared revenue, but first wants local governments to make, quote, meaningful spending reforms and permanent cost-saving measures. Are local officials able to make significant budget cuts?
Well, first of all, local officials have been making what I would have to characterize as drastic budget cuts over the past few years. City of Milwaukee alone has gotten rid of over 1,000 positions. That's a substantial number of employees. The number of local government employees is lower than it's been in decades. The number of police officers on the job in Wisconsin is the lowest it's been on record. And now they haven't been keeping records that long, but that's over a decade. So during a time when people are concerned about public safety, it doesn't make sense for us to be going the other way. We've talked to the speaker, and what the speaker acknowledges that local governments have had to tighten their belts and cut budgets. What the speaker is working with us on is, are there ways to truly innovate, not just cut, but innovate? Are there ways we can work together across city and village borders and share services, do things like that? Quite frankly, it's a very engaging conversation. The devil is in the details because there aren't really good state models for that. Hmm. But we are doing our best and we're confident we'll find something.
Jerry DeShane with us, Executive Director of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, as we talk about how cities and villages are faring. 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. You know, what about more privatizing or sharing services, like you just mentioned, to help drive down municipal costs? Is that realistic and doable? considering what you see out there as a crisis?
It is realistic and doable, but I want to remind people that in some parts of Wisconsin, we're going to have to spend more money, not less. One of the crises we're looking at right now is because there are fewer young people, fewer people coming into the workforce. Volunteer ambulance services across Wisconsin are quickly becoming unsustainable. There's just no one to drive the ambulance. Those people, whether we like it or not, are going to have to be replaced at least at some level with paid staff, and that's going to cost money. Are there other places where we could consolidate, could share services, share police, share fire, whatever? Absolutely. And I think we owe it to the taxpayer to be looking for those. But I think we have to be very careful that that works in some situations. It is not a one-size-fits-all by any means.
Very quickly, as we're starting to run out of time here, we saw Governor Evers, who met with the mayors of the state's five largest cities. What are smaller cities grappling with that it could be, you know, overlooked by state officials when they're not at the table?
The smaller cities are grappling with exactly the same problem Milwaukee, Madison, Green Bay are grappling with. Mm-hmm. The system itself is the problem. It's not a big city, small city, rural, urban. It's not that problem. The problem is the system itself is no longer serving the needs of local governments or their citizens.
Jerry, thank you so much for joining us.
Kate, it's always a pleasure, and I appreciate that you never once made a comparison to me and a troll.
Jerry DeShane, Executive Director of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, driving it home there. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.